This is Kabbalah 99. I'm Deborah Sophia. Today we have on the call Michael Harrison, an American contemporary classical music composer and pianist living in New York City, and a dear friend. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks so much, Deborah.
You have been commissioned by the Grammy-winning vocal group Roomful of Teeth, Alarm Will Sound, the cellist Maya Beiser, the Del Sol String Quartet, and many others. And in 2018, you won a Guggenheim Fellowship for the academic year. So congratulations, Michael. And what did that allow you to do? And can you share with us a composition that you began working on at that time?
The Guggenheim is a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and it's really fantastic that John Simon Guggenheim, that in his name, this foundation was created as a memorial for him, but has supported thousands of artists and scientists over many decades to create some of their best work. Because what you do is when you apply for the Guggenheim, you come up with a big project that you want to work on, and then they provide you with funding, basically, that's going to cover your living expenses while you're working on that project. So it's really an incredible opportunity for artists and scientists to fulfill their deepest dreams and ambitions. In my case, I worked on a number of different pieces. One was a commission from Alarm Will Sound, which is one of the leading contemporary chamber orchestras in the world. And then I also worked on a number of chamber pieces. And one of my big projects, which is combining Indian classical music with Western classical music, which is like a lifelong project of mine.
Well, let's focus there. You started out your musical training in classical piano, and when did you begin to study classical Indian raga?
In my late teens, I was fortunate enough to hear about Pandit Pranath, who was also the Indian music guru for two of our best Western classical composers, Terry Riley and Lamont Young, and many other really great musicians. And so at a very early age, I found out about Pandit Pranath and started studying first with his disciples, and then I became a disciple of his myself. And so I was living in Eugene, Oregon at the time. Pranath was in Berkeley, California, so I would drive down I-5, a good 10-hour drive, and take a few lessons, you know, multiple times a year. And then Pranath would come up to Oregon and visit me and give concerts and teach workshops. And then I started also studying with Lamont Young in New York City. And so when I was there, very often Pranath was there and I could study with him there. Towards the end of his life, I started going to India with him and some other musicians every year. And that was an opportunity to go really deep into the music in its natural setting. So it's been about 43 years now that I've been studying and practicing Indian classical music on a daily basis.
And what draws you to that music?
So many things. I would say the primary thing is I started meditation when I was 16, and music being my life's path, I either consciously or unconsciously sought out to combine my life's path, which is music, with my spiritual path. And so Indian music provided that for me, so that music is my meditation, is my spiritual path. Not necessarily all the music that I do, but I certainly a big part of my Indian music practice and some of my other music practice as well, which is my meditation practice. And so it's really nice to combine those two rather than to have them be two separate paths or practices.
I can understand what you're saying, because that's how you and I met, was through Pandit Pranath, or Guruji to us. And I also studied with him. And that is what drew me, because not being a musician, what drew me was the spiritual opening, singing raga with Guruji.
Let me just say that it is perhaps the oldest continuous music tradition in the world. My current Indian music guru, who I've been studying with for the last 20 plus years since Pandit Pranath died, is a part of a musical family, the same family that Pranath studied with, that goes back in the same family lineage something like 20 generations, I mean like 700 years. Yeah. And it's all been passed down within the family in the same way that you would like have chefs, you know, have their secret recipes that they would only maybe give to their family members. It's a very similar kind of thing. So it's a really rich, deep tradition and one of the richest musical traditions in the world. I would say perhaps as deep and rich as the Western classical music tradition. It provides me with not only a very complete musical training, which complements my Western classical training, but with many ideas that I can work with as a composer and pianist that I wouldn't have access to otherwise. So it really, I have like a lifetime's of work ahead of me in how I'm combining these different elements from Indian classical music and Western classical music. For example, Indian classical music, well, one of the great things about it, which really changed my life and my whole approach to music, was the tuning. Because when you learn Indian music, there's incredible attention put, especially as a vocalist, on what we call intonation, which means tuning. And you sing without vibrato, and the notes have to be perfectly in tune. So after a first year of study, my main instrument, the piano, started sounding out of tune. And what I realized, which they never taught me in music school, is that the Western tuning system is actually a compromise system where the purity of tuning of all the notes is compromised so that the notes can be equally spaced. And the advantage of that is that you can transpose music or play in any key. But the disadvantage is that the purity of harmony and intonation is all compromised. And so when I found this out, I got a second piano and started tuning it by ear. And that was the beginning of what is one of the main threads of my musical narrative, which is just intonation or true tuning. So that's something that I learned organically and naturally, not book learning, but actual experiential learning through studying Indian music.
So could you tell us a piece that you've composed that is in the just intonation?
Yeah, I think the most important one is a piece called Revelation. It has my own tuning system. It is a just intonation system, but not a historical one. It's my own version, and it creates kind of otherworldly sounds. It makes the piano sound different than anyone has really ever heard it before. If you listen to Revelation, give yourself a chance to get into it deeply a few times, because the first time you listen, it might really sound out of tune because you've never heard a piano sound that way. But as you get used to the tuning system, it starts to sink in.
Yes, that is one of my favorite works of yours. It was named one of the best classical recordings of 2007 by the New York Times, among other high praise. We will provide a link to a recording of Revelation for our listeners to enjoy.
Wonderful.
In our previous season, in season one, Kabbalah 99 interviewed Surawati William Gebbel. He chose you to compose the music to accompany his book, Nature's Hidden Dimension, Envisioning the Inner Life of the Universe. Your commission was to express the seven leading names musically. Can you tell us about the seven leading names and how you came to choose or compose the music?
Right. Well, Surawardi's book takes as its premise that the universe has an inner as well as an outer life, and that intelligence has always existed, and the unfolding and evolution of the universe is a sign of the universal intelligence wishing to know itself. The seven compositions in the album are reflections of the perfect qualities of the seven leading names. The seven leading names tell the story of an awakening primal self. So the seven leading names are like universal archetypes. Ahai signals the realization that I exist when nothing else is known. Al-Alim is a self-reflection with the discovery, I know I exist. Al-Qadr is an awakening of agency. I have the power and the will to do something. Al-Murid signifies the birth of desire, the motivation needed to direct the will. I desire for something. Al-Sami is an awakening to an innate capacity for self-discovery. In this case, an ability to detect vibration. I have the capacity of hearing. Al-Basir is the second capacity of discovery to awaken, the ability to detect light. I have the capacity of seeing. And finally, all kalim is the culminating capacity needed to fulfill the desire for self-knowledge. In order to know oneself, one must have the capacity to express what one contains. I have the capacity to express all that is within me. So these seven leading names are beautifully described, as I recited, by Sir Wardy Gebel. It's a collaboration where music, which transcends the intellect and which transcends language, can give us the ability to tap into the primordial essence of these universal archetypes.
I'm spellbound hearing you list seven leading names coming into being like that. And really what you're saying is that this is something happening all the time. It's not something that happened in the past. Sometimes we think of the world as being linear, like at one point there was Yahai and then Ya'alim, that this is happening all the time and in every one of us, in every manifestation. Is that true to say
that's
that?
Absolutely true. And it's happening not only at the individual human level, but at a cosmic level as well.
So how did you choose music to express each name?
Well, it was a collaboration with Sir Wardy. He's really in touch with the teachings. These are age-old teachings. And so I composed various pieces and fragments of pieces and sent them back and forth. You know, some of them he'd say, oh, this is, you know, exactly what he's looking for. He thinks is right for Basir, and then others were not quite right. And so through that process, we refined it until we got music that really felt like it hit the nail on the head, so to speak. And then, you know, I finished the pieces and went into the recording studio with some really great musicians and recorded them.
So you found pieces that express the inner intention or the experience of the names?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. So describe the music. What instruments are being used? Is it vocal? Do you use your just intonation when you composed it?
All of the pieces except for one are in just intonation. All High, which is the realization I exist, I actually am using the opening section for Revelation. It's called Revealing the Tones, which is a gradual unfolding of notes up from the harmonic series. So it's very universal and it's like a slow birth of the process. Alim is an Indian raga, a raga called Malkans, which is very primordial. And it was a recording that I did with two colleagues, Peyton McDonald and Ina Philippe, both who are Drupad singers. That's the ancient form of Indian classical singing. And what we're doing that's different from Indian music is what we call polyphonic raga, because ragas traditionally have one melody happening at a time, while as Western music often, like Bach, for example, have more than one melody happening at a time. We call that polyphony. And so what we're doing is we're taking the raga and adding many layers of melody at the same time by overdubbing the voices and the piano. So I'm very excited about it because it's the first recording of a concept that I've been developing with these other musicians over a number of years, which is the concept of polyphonic raga. Al-Qadr is the awakening of agency. I have the power and will to do something. So for that, I'm using another section of Revelation, which is called Tone Cloud 2. It's very kind of exciting and rhythmic and also kind of reflects this primordial vibration. Murid, the fourth one, signifies the birth of desire. That's a piano and violin piece that I recorded with the great violinist Tim Fain. Sami is an awakening to an innate capacity for self-discovery through hearing. And for this, I used a piece that I composed for the vocal group Roomful of Teeth, where they're singing different notes of the scale together and in this kind of echoing capacity. So it creates this beautiful cascade of sound. Basir is the second capacity of discovery to awaken through light, and the capacity of seeing. And for this, I used my instrument, the harmonic piano, which I created, and which plays 24 notes in an octave. And I took the recording and I slowed it down very slowly so that you hear the notes prayers of angels because of the way the just intonation on the harmonic piano is working and the electronics that I use to slow it down.
You were saying it's the voice of angels?
Like choirs of angels. And I don't think anyone will know how I actually created that sound because it doesn't sound like any instrument you've ever heard. Kalim is the last piece and the culminating capacity to fulfill the desire for self-knowledge. And this is a piece that is written for just intonation piano, violin, viola, and cello. And it's perhaps the most traditional piece on the album. It uses triadic harmonies, major and minor chords, and a beautiful melody that happens in a canon with the strings. That piece is also dedicated to one of my favorite composers, Arvo Pärt, and was inspired by his piece, Spiegel and Spiegel.
I love that piece. Well, Michael, you very kindly offered for our listeners to hear the composition Kalim now. It's the seventh leading name, which is the culminating capacity to fulfill the desire for self-knowledge. We opened this podcast with the first few phrases of this piece, and we'll play it in its entirety now.
Thank you.
That's beautiful. I want to linger with that music for a long time. You're ending at Kalima, and that is the desire for self-realization, correct?
Correct.
Right. Well, in Kabbalah, that's one step, but there's another step, which is self-transcendence. So beyond realizing the self is the desire to go back to source. So this self-realization and self-transcendence are looked at as two different aspects of living. So does that come up in any way in your understanding?
Well, the desire for self-realization is the same as Kalim. And the desire for self-knowledge or self-reflection would come up with Alim. And the realization that I exist in the first place comes up with Al-Hai. These universal teachings all came from the same part of the world, right?
Yeah.
From the Middle East. And ultimately are also connected from the same source, which is Abraham.
Abraham. From the tent of Abraham.
So I would say to your question, yes, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. We're almost getting at what I'm trying to eke out here, and that is there are two human intentions, both are important. One is to fulfill my purpose, my individual purpose. I'm here for a reason, and I need to self-realize, self-actualize, be the best I can be, like you are as a musician. You have a tremendous drive to be the very best musician you can be. There is another human drive, which is a negation of the self. It's also known, it's a very strong word, but it's an experience of annihilation where the individual no longer is. That is what is talked about as self-transcendence. When you're no longer working toward your own expression, but more to go back to source and dissolve into the oneness. And now we don't stay there. That's why annihilation is not so scary, because we recollect afterwards. But we move in the world with a different understanding of oneness. Is that also expressed, or is this these are the leading names and it hasn't quite gotten to that point yet? I kind of suspect that these leading names are about coming into being and not that other step talked about in the Parsha of going back to oneness. Or am I missing something here?
Well, that was really deep, Deborah. I hope everyone can follow along with that. Press replay, because what Deborah just said is basically the essence of the spiritual path. And I believe that the seven leading names are really taking us to that capacity for self-realization. But of course, self-realization involves the annihilation of the limited ego. We live in physical bodies in the world. And so our souls, which are eternal, are connected to this body with a limited ego. But we have the capacity to transcend that ego, or as you use the word, annihilate that ego temporarily so that it doesn't control us, so that in fact our souls have freedom from the limitations of the ego, at least for some time in this life. And I believe that that is one of the most important things we can do on the path of awakening.
Right, and in very simple terms, everyday terms, we have the desire to improve ourselves, and we have the desire to serve. So in a relationship with two people, let's say husband and wife, one is in school while the other one's working, and then the one who was in school goes on to fulfill their purpose with their work. Perhaps they've become a doctor or a nurse or some great service. That's self-transcendence, to be of service to others. So these are not just lofty terms. They're things we experience in everyday life. Do I focus on taking care of my personal needs, or do I spend more time with my children or my spouse? These are things that constantly come up in our lives daily, what choices we make to live this life fully, to feel fulfillment. Both come into play. So it can sound lofty, but it's actually very much every day.
Exactly. And for example, in a marriage, if each partner is willing to compromise 90% of the time, then you'll reach 100%.
That's true, isn't it? Everyone gives 100%. Right. And you give 100% to each child, even if you have one or 10.
Exactly.
That's the mystery of living. Michael, tell me how this engagement to come up with music for the seven leading names has impacted you. Has it given you insights that you didn't have before? Has it changed you in some way or impacted your music?
I think the main thing is that it's a beautiful concept, and it's not my concept. It is Sirwardi's concept. He was the one that reached out to me to do this collaboration, because music in itself represents and gives us an experience of something pre-verbal, something deeper than words and even deeper than imagery. And these seven leading names are universal archetypes. And so to have the opportunity to create music, which in essence is to meditate upon the essence of these archetypes, has been a really great journey. There are other things like this, like, for example, the Indian ragas. Each different raga invokes a different type of archetype. And when you play or sing that raga, you experience the being of that raga. So it's a very similar idea that you're creating music that taps into a universal archetype that you're meditating on or you're getting into the essence of. So I think it has deepened my capacity for that understanding and also those types of relationships between the seven leading names and the Indian ragas, for example.
That's beautiful. So Michael, what are you working on these days?
So I'm working on a multidimensional project which involves interdisciplinary collaborations and also Indian ragas. One of the forms of the project is called Passage. And Passage, in its ultimate form, will be a 24-hour art installation. We have a museum lined up for the initial show in 2023. And it's a collaboration with visual and media artist Nina Elder, but it also involves Sirwardi Gebel as an astrophysicist and a roboticist and some other collaborators as well. And the concept is to go into a 24-hour cycle of human time, planetary time, and cosmic time.
Wow.
And there will be a lighting installation that gives you a sense of what is happening at that time between the Earth and the Moon and the Sun and their relationships. Yeah. And then the music is going to be a 24-hour music cycle so that it's gradually evolving in tune with what's happening with the cosmic cycle. And for the music, I'm also drawing on Indian ragas, which I have extensive experience and have been studying and practicing daily for over 40 years. And the Indian ragas correspond to different times of day. So it's a natural connection to have, you have morning ragas, dusk ragas, evening ragas, midnight ragas, etc. And so I'm using the ragas as we go around the 24-hour cycle to tap into these cosmic rhythms.
That's amazing. In Taoist philosophy, they'll show the circular day set inside of the circular year, so that there is that feeling of that one cycle is reflective of another and another. It sounds a bit like what you're doing, that they each overlay one over the other.
Mm-hmm.
And they have similar qualities.
And it's an ancient concept. You know, the ancient Greeks and Pythagoras and the Renaissance thinkers were all realizing that there was a connection between the whole number of proportions of music, for example, and the orbits of the planets. And in a sense, you could say that the universal foundation for music, which is vibration, is the software of the universe.
Oh, I like that analogy. So, Michael, for our last question, why music? What drives you to continue to perform and compose such pathbreaking music?
Well, I just love music, you know, and I feel really blessed to be able to have a life in music. I get up every day and think, wow, you know, I get to be a musician today. And it's a blessing. I'm going to read a few quotes from the Sufi message of Hazrat Inayat Khan, Volume 2, which is all about music. And this book has been my lifelong companion and my inspiration. Music, being the finest of the arts, helps the soul to rise above differences. It unites souls because even words are not necessary. Music is beyond words.
That is beautiful. And when I listen to your music, Michael, it is also beyond words. And I so appreciate you coming on this podcast today and sharing your insights with our listeners. So thank you.
Oh, it's been my joy. Thanks for inviting me.
For more mind-heart awakenings like these, you can follow us on this podcast and on our blog at Kabbalah 99. That's where we discuss the weekly Torah portion through the lens of today's challenges and offer practices to stay sane, grounded, and connected. If you like this episode, please remember to tell one friend about it. Next week, we'll hear from another thought leader who will help us to explore our experience of life and our place in this universe of wonder. Thanks for listening. I'm Deborah Sophia. See you next week.